simplest things for people to start with in this shop over the winter is pull fluid samples on all of your equipment.
Okay.
And that's coolant samples, oil samples, and hydraulic fluid samples. If it's a semi or something, you may want to pull differential samples. It's about $25 to $30 a piece to send each sample to the laboratory. If equipment is going to sit, go to town and buy one of those cheap blue tops. All right, they're like $3, $4. Even if you have to buy two of them for a combine, and always park the equipment on a tarp.
Ladies and gentlemen, farmers, ranchers, and distinguished guests, thank you for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast, where we discuss the latest ideas, methods, trends, and techniques available to help your farm achieve higher levels of farm profitability. The Farm for Profit podcast is co-hosted by Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Bankerman, and David Whitaker, the Iowa Land Guy, where in tandem, they will share their ideas and advice from industry experts. Thank you again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long. And now, here's Tanner and David.
Hey, listeners, welcome back to the Farm for Profit podcast. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
And this is David Whitaker.
Thank you for joining us. And if you're brand new, this is a profit show. So we have two different formats of our episodes. Our profit show, we go with the What's Working in Ag segment, followed by a general topic, helping your farm achieve higher levels of profitability. And the following week, or the next Q episode in your listening platform, is our fun shows, where we pick somebody in agriculture, interview them, enjoy a couple of beverages, and have a fun time talking about current events, Dave.
And Tanner, that's why they call us the Mullet of Agriculture Podcast. We got the business one week, and then on the backside, we got the fun side with Farm for Fun. We want to thank all our listeners for sharing, liking, rating, reviewing. We surely appreciate it. Send any topic ideas to farmforprofitllc@gmail.com or hit us up on social media.
It has been a lot of fun growing in 2020 with you guys, and we look forward to 2021. One of the reviews we got, actually former guest Eddie Henning from Tyler Richton and the High Bank Boys, he said, good work on the new podcast logo, guys. So I don't know if you have noticed, but our podcast logo has changed a little bit, and hopefully we are doing something that's favorable in your eyes, but even if it's not, let us know what you think.
And so now we go into our What's Working in Ag. Every week we have this, Tanner, and it's a part that I like. It's kind of like coffee shop talk for farmers. And we have Taylor with us. Taylor, welcome.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Really good. So, Taylor, you own a company called Engel Detailing. Can you explain to our listeners a little bit about what that is and your tie to agriculture?
Sure. So I started this company in, I would say, late May, early June of 2020. And I started it, and I actually quit my job and pursued this. So what I do is I specialize in the polishing and ceramic coating of agricultural equipment and industrial equipment. So what that means is I take paint surfaces on, say, tractors, combines, sprayers, pickups, payloaders, you name it. I polish them out, and I bring it back to a better than new shine. The reason as to why I did this is because I grew up in a smaller town in East Central Nebraska, Columbus, Nebraska. I was born on the farm. I've been the same farm my entire life. And when I was growing up with my dad and my uncle had taught me what pride truly meant. Pride was, you know, when you wake up in the morning, and you go out and do the things you do to the best of your abilities. And you know that at the end of the day, you did your best to accomplish what you were striving for. And one thing that my dad had always told me is that no matter what you do, you always want to make sure that you take the pride in what you have and what you do, because that speaks for who you are and how you take care of things. And I always like to keep our stuff clean. Well, then I decided to take this to the next level and start doing this for some other people that actually inquired about it. So I started running a polisher on some other tractors and shining them up and making them look nice and appear, you know, very well. And honestly, it just snowballed from there. I didn't realize that there was an actual market for it. I figured it was just one of those things where, you know, maybe a guy here or there would like to have the stuff shined up, but understanding the reason as to why, it makes a lot more sense now as to why people actually want to protect their investment.
So our episode, our main focus topic after you today is making small changes that might have a large impact on your farm. So how is what you're doing to equipment, semi-tractors, all the above, how could that have a large impact on somebody's farm?
Well, let me put it to you this way, and you guys know a lot better than I do about this. Farmers rely on their assets on a day in and day out basis. So they have so much value built up in their assets. And working with these people that, you know, trade their equipment in every 2, 3, 4, 5 years and see the depreciation level of this equipment, what we try to do is we actually try to maximize the value that farmers have invested in their equipment by getting it to a top tier level of appearance. So it's making a tractor look better than new, even if it's 10 years old. And what we do is we take a tractor that might have been worth $120,000 and we polish it out, we ceramic coat it, and we make it worth $135,000.
Oh my.
And for example, we actually did a combine for a fellow out in western Nebraska. He was actually going to trade off his combine anyways, but he'd just like to have it polished up for the dealership. He had a really good relationship with them. And actually, by the time we got done polishing this combine, the dealership had actually come out to look at it. And what they had originally stated him for a price, they actually gave him, I think it was $18,000 more in trade-in value for the combine because of how it looked. And they even said to them, it looked better than new.
Hmm. That's awesome.
That's a way to have a big impact.
Taylor, you might not know this, but so I'm an auctioneer. And when I think of preparing equipment before an auction, it sounds like exactly what you're doing, except to an extreme level, which is great. If people wanted a rough idea of cost estimate, how do they do that? How do they get a hold of you?
So they can get a hold of me on my Facebook page, Engel Detailing, or they can give me a call on my phone number. My phone number is 402-910-2831. If they are interested in having any of that stuff done to their equipment to maximize the value that they have invested, then I'd be more than happy to go ahead and take their call and see if we can get something going.
Awesome.
And so, actually,
go ahead.
I was going to emphasize on something. So you say you come from an auction company. What's kind of funny is we've actually done some work for auction companies here around the area. So like Auction Time and Big Iron, we actually have done a tremendous amount of work with the companies around here auction-wise. And what's funny is we actually did a tractor for Big Iron. I believe it was a 4230 or it was a 4030, one or the other. We had actually did our full polish job on there, and we had gone through the entire tractor and cleaned it up. It had like 4,000 original hours. And we had actually set a record for the most money brought for that model's tractor on Big Iron.
Oh, boy.
So you also, Taylor, mentioned that you do ceramic coating. What is that for a listener that doesn't know what that is?
So ceramic coating is just the icing on the cake for maximizing the value that you have invested in your equipment. Ceramic coating is a coating that we apply to a freshly polished or painted surface. That is actually a lifetime product. On all our automotive stuff, we actually give you a 7-year warranty on all of our automotive vehicles that are over the road. So your trucks, your cars, your semis, those are all covered by a 7-year warranty. And this coating, what it does is it actually acts as a clear coat. But this clear coat actually has nanoparticles in it, not to get all too scientific, but it creates an extremely hydrophobic surface, which means that it's extremely water repellent. And it also creates a high gloss as well. And it's also a polysilane based product. So it's actually very durable. So this clear coat like substance, what we call ceramic coat, actually prevents, it's actually scratch resistant. It's water resistant. It's dirt resistant. It's dirt repellent. And it's actually perfect for cleaning off equipment that gets covered in mud and dirt and grime and road salt, you name it. This stuff is actually your best friend. You can actually take it a bucket of mud and throw it on the hood of your tractor. Every single piece of that's just going to bead right off, and it's always going to look better than new for years to come.
Nice. I was wondering, because I have, you know, obviously follow your Facebook page and have seen the pictures and the videos that you've put out there, and things do look extremely well. I was wondering if that ceramic coating had to deal with that.
Yep. So our industry-leading Roar ceramic coating actually has all to do with that, because what we like to do is we do our very best to do a polishing process on these painted surfaces. So like on your combine or on your tractor, we remove all of that oxidized paint or the scratch paint or the defects from the factory. And I don't think we've actually seen a brand new tractor that has a defect in it, to be honest. But when we do that, we get it looking its very best. And in that moment, you sit there and you decide, am I going to sit here and have to wax this for years to come and you try to keep it looking like this? Or am I going to put this industry-leading Roar ceramic coating on here and I literally never have to wax this ever again? And it's going to make my wash time so much easier. It's going to be extremely water resistant, so I don't have to worry about water spots standing all over the hood and on the glass. It's literally agriculture's new best friend. What's nice about it, it's 100% chemical resistant. So you can take a bucket of 32% nitrogen and dump it on the paint surface, and it's not going to affect it whatsoever.
Huh.
It's not going to affect the paint nor the coating. It's going to bead right off. And we're actually scheduled to do a set of sprayer booms here this later in the week because of the fact that they apply fertilizer with it. And they're actually having to have their booms resprayed because of how much that fertilizer ate through it. Now, we guarantee that this coating will definitely withstand any kind of harsh elements such as fertilizer application, chemical application, road salt, you name it. So these guys are never going to have to respray their booms ever again, and they're always going to be looking in their tip-top shape.
Okay, so I have a feeling that every listener that owns a sprayer and every listener that drives through road salt just stopped and picked their jaw off of the floor, because I know that all three of us sitting here in the studio right now did the same thing. That is fantastic. So really appreciate you joining us today, Taylor, and introducing us to Engel Detailing. I will make sure that your phone number gets put in the show notes, and I'll have a connection to your Facebook page when this episode comes out. With that, again, thank you so much for being a part of this episode and educating us on this, and we hope you have a good one.
Do you happen to have a hashtag, like hashtag Engel Clean or something like that? I'm just curious.
No, I haven't designed a hashtag yet. I got my marketing guy working.
All right, we need to start you a hashtag. Hashtag Engel Clean.
I like that. I like that, Dave. Yeah, so.
All righty, guys. Well, I appreciate your time.
You bet. Have a good one. So, yeah, that was something that caught my attention, Dave. And the other company that's caught my attention is Flying Ag, flyingag.com. You've got a drone, and I know you use one on multiple occasions, not just for selling real estate, but even for a hobby. What did you like about the way these guys set up their packages?
So one of the interesting things about getting in the drone industry, there's a lot to know. I just got an email today that they're going to even track where your drones are. These guys are on top of the market. They're in front of it. They know what you need. They can tell you where to go for education. And they put an entire package together just for you of everything you're going to need, from case to battery to do you need the thermal, do you not? And they have the education to talk with you about it. So they get a discount if they type in Farm for Profit. Is that correct?
That's correct. So thank you to flyingag.com for liking the mission of Farm for Profit podcast and wanting to extend all of our listeners. If you order from them through February 1st,
it's got
to
be quick. Yeah.
Yep. Through February 1st, you get a free battery. So you get an additional battery in that kit. So that's Farm for Profit when you go out there and you order from flyingag.com. But we really appreciate their partnership. It's always fun having support for the podcast, but now I am extremely excited to roll into our main topic for the day. And Dave, it's kind of a different topic for our listeners. We're going with a concept of making small changes to have a large impact on your farm's profitability, but we're going to focus on the mechanical side of the operation, the machinery, the taking care of your asset side. So not something that we have done before, and we're really excited to do this because we are extremely pleased to have a celebrity on our podcast today. Mm-hmm. The Engine Man is with us today, although some may refer to him as the Hot Rod Farmer.
Hot Rod Farmer.
He is the host of the Idle Chatter podcast, creator of FarmMachineryDigest.com, and now the host of the Machinery Digest radio show. Ray Bohax is a sweet corn farmer from Warren County, New Jersey, with a knack for writing. He is here today to share with us some of the insights from over 3,000 articles that he's written about how to pay attention to the three legs of the farm profitability stool. hopefully today we can come across a couple of things that can help you be more profitable as a farmer. Welcome to the podcast, Ray.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, with that introduction you gave me, I'm humbled. Are you sure you have the right guy on the show? Maybe I called the wrong guy in the show.
I was curious about the sweet corn part. You're going to have to divulge a little more in that. Tell us, how are you connected with ag, or how have you been connected with ag?
Well, basically what had happened is that my family has had our farm in Warren County, New Jersey. And that is, for your listeners all around the country and probably all around the world, our claim to fame in the town of Hackettstown, where our farm is that the M&M candy factory is here. So if you ever look on the back of a bag of M&Ms, it says Mars Wrigley's, Hackettstown, New Jersey, and all the M&M candies are made about 2 miles from our farm. And we've had this farm in the Bohax family. We're of Ukrainian descent. I'm second generation American. My parents were all born here, but my grandparents were all from the Ukraine. And what had happened was when they came to Ellis Island, my grandparents, they were into New York City because our farm is only about 75 miles from New York. And, but their heart was always in agriculture. And as people know, the Ukraine, they used to call it years ago, the breadbasket of Russia. There's a lot of wheat grown there, as you guys know. So anyway, they were stuck in New York City, but they longed to come back to the farm. And they somehow found this area in New Jersey, Warren County, which was back 100 years ago, was probably predominantly Ukrainian and Polish immigrants. And about 75 years ago, my grandparents bought our farm, and then it was passed down through the generations, and now my sister and I own it. So that's how we started there. But the farm was never large enough for us to make a full-time living off of it. So my father, and then ultimately my sister, doesn't live on the farm anymore. She lives in upstate New York. She's a paramedic. And then myself, we always had off-the-farm jobs, and that's why we got into the sweet corn business, because when you don't have a lot of acreage, you need to raise a high dollar value crop.
Yeah.
So that's how we got into it. So this farm has been in my family much longer than I've been alive. It's not a century farm. It's probably 3/4 of a century farm.
That's pretty close. So now, for our listeners that maybe aren't familiar with you and your podcast, could you explain to them what I alluded to in the introduction about the three legs of the profitability stool that you use in your analogy?
Yes, I would be glad to. In essence, if I just roll the odometer back a little bit, is that I was caught between two worlds. I had one leg and my love for agriculture, and the other leg was my love for cars and mechanical things and machinery. And what had happened was that then again, I had a career off of the farm and went to school and studied mechanical engineering, and then got involved in the auto industry and but living on the farm was a part-time farmer. And what I saw, excuse me, and this is predominantly dairy country. We never dairied. But what I saw as I grew from a young man into a teenager and then into an adult is that the farmers that I was exposed to, really were concentrating on crop production. They were concentrating, because they were predominantly dairy, on milk production, and they were really not putting any effort into their machinery. And then I would see machinery breaking down. I would see machinery not running properly, running inefficiently, not getting the proper life cycle out of a piece of equipment. And that could be whether it's a pickup truck or a tractor or a combine or what have you. And then over time, I said to myself, geez, you know, it's a three-legged stool. And I'm a recovering drag racer. So as a drag racer, as an engineer, you look for incremental change. You look for, if you want to make a 10 horsepower, you look for 1 horsepower in 10 places, which is basically what a high yield farmer does. And then I saw, and I guess over time, I started to say, geez, you know, the third leg of this stool is missing, because people in agriculture are putting so much effort, and rightfully so, into crop production and or animal husbandry, and into marketing efforts, But they kind of left that third leg of the stool off, and the stool was cockeyed. And then I saw, coming from the automotive industry and just that background and transportation industry, is that if you don't watch your machinery expenses, no matter how profitable you are on the agricultural side, you're really not going to be profitable, because I always felt it's not what you make, it's what you keep that counts.
Yep, so money is made in the margins, I say. And Tanner, we just talked with Machinery Pete, who kind of said a similar thing about when farmers are going to sell their equipment, they would prepare for it. So, Ray, what you're saying is just maintain it the whole time, and then you'll have a better return on investment in the end, correct?
Yes, that's correct. But the thing, you're 100% correct. I'm going to key off my friends, the Hefty brothers, with the Ag PhD program and everything that they do, is that if you look at what they're bringing to the agricultural audience, and they're saying about understanding your soil test, not just be able to read the numbers, trying to get the highest, the best return on your investment with your inputs, to be truly in harmony with what you're doing in the agronomic side. Well, I'm saying the same thing. It's not only maintaining your equipment, because if you go under, and that's where I think people get confused, is that I'm not telling you, you should change your oil. 99% of the people know that. And what people get confused with is that it's no disrespect to anyone. I could cut a piece of wood. I could nail it together. I am not a carpenter. All right, I could stick two pieces of metal together. You would not want me to weld a pipeline. All right, so the thing basically is, because they think that because they have they're mechanically inclined, means that they know how to work with their hands. It doesn't mean they have the theory behind how to properly work with, and I don't mean how to work with physically to drive, to diagnose, service, maintain, and repair their equipment. And that's what I'm trying to bring to the table. And to be quite honest with you, I kind of patterned what I'm doing off of what the Ag PhD guys are doing, because they're taking you to a higher level. And what I'm looking to do is say, I can't help you with agronomy, I can't help you with marketing, but I can help you to have a better understanding, because I've seen time and time again is that more potential profit flies out the window or out the door of the farm shop with either misdiagnosing, spending, having untimely failures on a piece of equipment because it's not being maintained or serviced properly, or you're not reading the signs of what the equipment is telling you. You're missing the optimum planting window, and that extrapolates out into a whole nightmare. And as you being a lender, to the guy, you know, people tend to think that machinery failures happen because of bad luck. 95% of the time they happen because the operator or the owner refuses to pay attention to what is going on with it until it actually, in the car business, we used to say that people like to do maintenance on the back of a tow truck. So when it's time to change the oil. So it's really not a maintenance thing. It's an understanding. And that's why, and it's be able to acknowledge that third leg of the stool. And I tell my audience that nothing that I will tell you will ever make you a nickel. Nothing. It'll have you save the nickel you made, because in any business, your income is from what you produce. I'm a sweet corn farmer. My income is from sweet corn. If you're a dairy farmer, your income is from the milk. I'm not going to make you another 100 pounds of milk, but what I'm going to basically do is have you keep the lion's share of your income from that 100 pounds of milk, whatever the sale price is, and not be able to have it be stolen by your equipment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And as a listener of your podcast, I have picked up on a couple of times where you've said that repeatedly. And I do really like the concept of if something goes wrong with your piece of equipment, very rarely is it bad luck. It's something that could have been diagnosed or could have been maintained properly or could have been fixed well ahead of the situation, Dave.
And Tanner, we've talked about this through our whole podcast from day one, and that is maybe taking the stuff you have and making it better. Sometimes we've talked about gaining new stuff or new technology, etc. This goes right along with like BASF. Their old statement was, we don't make the things we use. We make the things you use better. So it's just taking and making sure, like, even who was the, in our first conference that we ever had, we had somebody that did that with farmland. They took the waste acres and they said that
it was Ag Solver, and then they got bought out because their idea was doing so well.
Yeah. So they basically are taking the acres that don't do as well in production. Same as single row shutoff. We're taking the acres that don't need the certain chemical, putting it there.
Yep. So Ray, you got a good point that me as a lender, I get to see a lot of income and expense reports every year. And it is very interesting to look across my client base who has a higher repair expense compared to those who are maintaining their equipment a little bit more efficiently. But what about, so this podcast is going to come out. It's going to be our first profit show of 2021. So what about,
oh, wow, thank you.
Yes. So what about this time of year is good for a farmer to think about how things went on their farm mechanically?
Well, exactly. And that's a perfect time of year. So what you need to do is, first of all, it depends upon the record keeping you have. But most of the time, even if you have a larger operation, you kind of know where the machinery went south on you and what basically happened. But the first thing, from my viewpoint, is that I want to drill into the audience, is that don't just assume it's bad luck, or don't assume, as you alluded to, or Mother Nature, what have you. You know, as an aside, before I answer your question, is that in agriculture, we cannot control the markets. We cannot control the weather. The reliability and the cost per acre or cost per hour to run that machine is really the only thing we have control over in agriculture. And for the most part, we're not controlling that. So we're giving it some kind of quasi look at it and say, okay, fine. So as far as the winter is concerned, what I always like to do and suggest, and I even did a show on it, is that what you need to do is look back in your mind and be realistic with yourself and say, okay, fine. You know, all right, you know, this happened. The hydraulic pump went on this. So take four or five of the major breakdowns or failures that you had. Hopefully you didn't have five of them. And then jot them down on a piece of paper. I'm very big about writing stuff down so you could look at it physically with your eyes. Okay, and let's say the hydraulic pump went on the planter. Right, we have a hydraulic pump running on the planter. And the thing is that, so okay, that happened and this cost me X amount of dollars. Alrighty. Now the thing is that what could I have, now ask yourself questions and just write it down in outline format. You're not writing Gone with the Wind and say, what could I have done? You know, did I ignore something that was giving me a telltale sign that pump was going, or whatever item you want to discuss? All right. Did I identify why that pump failed? And whether it's a hydraulic pump, whether it's a water pump on an irrigation system, or whatever, whenever you have a pump fail, and if it's not something like a bearing going, wearing out is different than failing. The thing is that most of the time it's due to cavitation, and that could be the suction side cavitation, pressure side cavitation, or it could be the RPM that the pump is being run at. So did I identify, did I do failure analysis? In the engineering community, we do failure analysis. High-yield farmers will go into the field and they'll say, hey, man, look at this. I'm going to pull a tissue sample. I'm going to do a pre-sidress nitrogen test. I'm going to do a sap test on this. What's going on with this plant? So we need to, did we do failure analysis on what happened? What went wrong? Could I have, so this is your protocol for your winter. Could I have done something differently? All right. And what can I do to not have that happen again? And the best thing for you to do, the simplest things for people to start with in this shop over the winter, is pull fluid samples on all of your equipment.
Okay.
And that's coolant samples, oil samples, and hydraulic fluid samples. If it's a semi or something, you may want to pull differential samples, differential grease samples. It's about $25 to $30 a piece to send each sample to the laboratory.
Where do you send them? I wouldn't even know where to send them.
There's many labs. You could just do an internet search, oil analysis.
Okay.
Or fluid analysis. I used to use a lab out in Washington State that was called Oil Analyst Inc., but they got bought out by a big company. They're like soil labs. There's no lack of them if you look for them.
So, okay, that's good.
And it's going to come back like a soil test. So whereas a soil test will tell you, okay, base saturation K, what your a CEC is. You can say, well, I don't understand what this means. Well, you flip it over on the back of the fluid analysis, and it'll give you an idea of what it is and can steer you in the proper direction. And most better labs will allow you even, they'll talk to you, say, well, geez, look at this or look at that. But the important thing is to answer your question is that by pulling fluid samples on your equipment, fluid samples are used to be a predictor of what is going on. Because just like with a person or with a plant, we all know in agriculture, right, by the time you see it on the plant, on a leaf, it's really too late.
I got you.
So the thing is that the fluid samples say, so let's say now that you're starting to see some elemental metals in the coolant on one of your diesel engines. Well, historically, not all the time, but historically, that's showing that you're starting to get liner cavitation erosion.
I got
you. And if you let that go, you're putting basic physics from high school, fluid is non-compressible. You leak fluid into that cylinder. You're kicking that connecting rod through the block, and in a big diesel, that's $30,000.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
So start with your fluid analysis. And then also, to what you were saying in the beginning of the show about resale, build an inventory with that, because you'll have all of these fluid analysis reports, and if it's a brand new piece of equipment, you'll be able to track that and say, hey, buddy, hey, whatever color tractor you buy, whatever color, whatever truck you buy, say, hey, look at this. Here, I got all test data here.
All right? The test data.
So usually there's a hierarchy of newer equipment, and then if they're farmers like me, nothing ever gets thrown out, right? So you always keep it. It goes, this is still good. So even if you apply this to your older equipment or your newer equipment, it makes no difference. But I also to expand upon that for a second, and that I look at farm equipment, specifically anything that's involved with crop production. And this is only my way of looking at it. I consider a combine harvest production, right? Not crop production.
Right.
And crop production equipment, to my way of thinking, is a lot like emergency equipment, an ambulance, a fire truck, a police car. It has to run when it runs. So even if you had a brand new piece of equipment, it's a 2-year lease, a 3-year lease, and you're 2 years into it, and if that financial condition that you're leasing this expensive piece of equipment, I'd still spend the $75 for 3 fluid tests on it, because I don't want that hydraulic pump going bad in it. And just because it's new, it doesn't mean it can't go bad at 3 years old. And I don't want to miss the optimal planting window because my tractor broke down.
Right. When it's time to go, it is time to go. And that's important, especially even like you said with that auger tractor. You need to be able to unload that grain using that auger tractor. So I can see why that's important. But Ray, I picked up something else in one of your podcasts that caught my attention. And you mentioned that at the coffee shop, it's exciting for a farmer to talk about high yields. It's exciting for a farmer to brag about that, possibly selling at the top of the market and getting the best price for their crop. But we don't find farmers bragging or tooting their horn about having good maintenance or shop routines. Why do you think that is?
I've come up with different theories. I think came up on the podcast. I just think it's not sexy, and I think there's a certain part of people like to complain. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't insult anybody, but I think they'd rather. I honestly don't know, but I honestly don't know why they do. Why it just doesn't seem to be a topic that people want to have coffee shop talk on. They're saying, hey man, I got 30,000 hours on this tractor and look at all the money I saved. This is fantastic. I honestly don't know. I think it's not sexy. I don't think that because it's not what you're producing. If you're in a business to produce a product, and whether it's a farm or whether it's a factory, you tend to, human nature being what it is, you tend to, and I fall prey to it also, I'm no different than anyone else, but you tend to brag more about what your vocation is than the tools that go into supporting your vocation.
I was circling that back close to home. My in-laws have a fat cattle feedlot operation, and I helped them out over the holidays. I noticed that the main payloader that you know, loads the feed in the feed wagon every single day, has close to 25,000 hours on it. But that's just the situation that a livestock producer that has to rely on something starting up and running every day, that payloader gets way more attention than the tractor that sits on the planter. So even in their own operation, there's certain things that get taken care of much, much differently. So I could see how that would be real, real important, Dave.
Yeah, it definitely can. And, you know, it made me think of the technology aspect to it. You know, so when I think of the guys that do brag about the equipment, it's the old 4020, it's the 44 series John Deere that has ran for, you know, thousands and thousands of hours, and they just don't make them like that anymore. I never hear anybody talking about the new stuff, but that's because it's an IVT transmission and more technology. And I think it became, did we become more of a throwaway world where we just get it new? And
that's
go to
point.
Go buy a new one. You know, in the olden days, that's my parents, you know, they have stuff that they've kept from their parents from the 30s or, you know, et cetera, Cold War era. And now it's our generation, the 40, 50 year olds, maybe were taught to just go to Best Buy and get a new one. And now we have the millennial farmers coming in that they just need less. We'll do it with less stuff.
Right. Could be more efficient. So that's a great point, Dave. And Ray, I think we've done a good job for our listeners, helping them understand that this third leg is important and how paying attention to your equipment fleet in multiple facets can help increase profitability by keeping stuff from going out the shop door, like you said. So how can we get started? What's a good suggestion for someone who this is hitting home with and they're ready to make the first step? How would you suggest we get started down the right path to taking care of our equipment?
Well, start with the basics. Start with having a strict maintenance schedule and adhering to it. Start with spending time looking at things. Look under the hood. Pay attention. You know, if something is making noise, if something doesn't sound right, don't operate the equipment with blinders and earplugs on, metaphorically. You know what I'm saying? If something is making noise, look at it, right? Look at it. Use proper fluids in it, and that's even more critical today. And why I'm saying proper fluids? Because, you know, engine oils, hydraulic fluids, coolants are so specific, brand specific today, and it wasn't like years ago. Well, I'm going to use Delo and everything because that's what I buy, or I'm going to use Prestone and everything. There's additive packages that the OEs put into their proprietary additive package that's going to be critical to the life of that equipment, right? But also, when you're doing something, keep your eyes open. So, you know, if you're working on, let's say you're checking the oil, don't just check the oil and look and, you know, say, you know, spend two seconds. Like the way you would study your cows or the way you would study your crops, you see a farmer go out into the field and he's going to go take over by his soybeans. He's going to turn the leaf over. He's going to take it. He's going to break a leaf off. He's going to, or his corn, he's going to look at it. Do the same thing with your equipment. It's just a mindset of thinking about it and not saying, well, that's good enough. Or if something is leaking, for instance, let's say a valve cover gasket is leaking, something simplistic, don't make light of it. Because you could say, it's only a valve cover leaking, valve cover gasket, it's not the end of the world, it's only a valve cover gasket leaking. Now, what basically happens is that oil gets on everything, all right? It doesn't have to be pouring out. It attracts dust, all right? The dust works its way into the different components, but also now there's wires there that over time are going to get saturated with oil, or even if it's a diesel, there's wires. There's air conditioner lines that get saturated with oil. Once they get saturated oil, they get porous and they start to leak. All right, when they start, and I'm just painting this scenario, they start to leak. They start to leak, and then when they leak out refrigerant, all right, they take in moisture. They take in moisture. The moisture mixes with the refrigerant, and it creates acid. And in every air conditioning system, in the receiver, dryer, or accumulator, which is depending upon if it's on the low side or the high side, there's a desiccant. And a desiccant bag looks like, when you buy electronics, that little bag looks like salt in there to absorb moisture. There's a desiccant. The acid eats the desiccant, puts the desiccant, the little crystals throughout the whole system, grenades the compressor, plugs the orifice tube, and you have an $8,000 repair on the air conditioner in this combine that not overnight, happened because you ignored that valve cover gasket leak.
It sounds like it's the paying attention to the little things.
The big things will take care of themselves.
And I wrote on my sheet, pride and ownership. One thing I noticed, I was in Montana last week, all their equipment sits outside. And in Iowa here in the Midwest, we have a lot of machine sheds or Quonsets that most farmers do take pretty good pride and ownership in their stuff and keep it inside. Part of that is looking at your stuff, Tanner. My question is, I'm big enough. I'm not, but let's pretend I am. I'm big enough that I hire four different hired men to come out, or women, and they come out and they help me, or during harvest, I need more help from neighbors and family, etc. How do I get them to do the same thing, to have the same attention to detail or pride in ownership? It's not their tractor. They don't care. They don't know how much it costs. They don't worry about the rebuild on it that Ray's talking about.
My assumption is it's going to come down to your training abilities. The way that you coach your hired hands up, the way that you train them to take care of your equipment and put that together. But Ray, what do you think? How do you get hired help to take care of a piece of equipment just as well as you would?
Because you have, that's always going to be a challenge in any business. You have a guy who has a trucking company, all right, he has drivers in the truck, and historically in the machinery world, whether it's vehicles, trucks, tractors, the more operators you have in it, the amount of the reliability usually goes down exponentially because people drive them differently. They're harder on things or what have you. But the analogy tonight, and people have asked me that question, they've worded it a different way, is that just like if a loved one goes into the hospital, that you have to be involved with their care, sadly. You know what I'm saying? You have to be able to be there and say, geez, mom didn't get the medicine today yet. This is what happened. Dad needs his blood pressure taken or what have you. Not be a pain in the neck.
So you're saying the hired hand actually check the oil, not do it for him.
Right. Or you have to say, hey, did you check the oil? Did you do this? Or you have to do it depending upon, the thing basically is that other than, let's say like during harvest, checking the oil, blowing off the combine, none of this stuff has to be done on a daily basis. You know what I'm saying? But you need to be able to be intimate with your equipment and not 100% rely on your hired people, but you need to also to try to explain to them that it is important for them at least to convey to you and say, hey, Ray, when I was out in the field over there, something sounded funny underneath the hood. I don't expect the guy to be able to jump under there and diagnose and fix it, but make you aware of it. I mean, that's what I do with my wife. She says, the car did something funny. She doesn't know. She puts it in drive. She doesn't know anything about it. Just step on the gas and go, right? But I need for her to convey that to me. Just like a doctor, if you don't feel well, you go to the dentist. The dentist says, well, do you have any pain or anything? Yeah, no, I don't have any pain. Okay, fine. Then he goes on with his examination. But you need to have that conveyed to you. And you also need to, sadly, you need to do a lot of it yourself. And this is not, I don't want to say that you're going to be underneath the hood or laying underneath this equipment 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But it's just a mindset. It's a thought process. But you also need to pay attention to how your, and hired help could be family, right?
Sure.
It could be, just like I say to my sister, I don't like the way you're doing that, right? And the thing is, you have to see how they operate the equipment, right? Is the person while the truck is still rolling, is he changing it from reverse to drive,
yeah,
right? Making is he sitting there and letting the engine idle excessively?
These all sound like things that might be low hanging fruit. Tanner, do you have other examples of something that, for our listener farmers, Ray's talking to us about simple things, listen, look, feel. What are you thinking of other ways that it might be low hanging fruit for our farmers?
So like I said earlier, Ray, I have listened to your podcast, and I've picked through a couple of things. The first thing I want to do is just direct our listeners to the Hot Rod Farmer podcast. And not every episode is going to pertain to you or what you're looking for, but scroll through the titles because Ray does a good job of laying some things out. So if you're all right with it, Ray, I picked out a couple of episodes as we get ready to wrap up our show today. If you could kind of give us a little overview about what you talked about during that show, I think that would be valuable to our listeners. The first one that I grabbed, since it's this time of year, is how do you protect an engine when you're going to put it into storage? So I'm imagining We just wrapped up fall. We're going to put and tuck everything in, do that machine shed Tetris. What are some advice that you have for our listeners on preparing that engine to be stored for a while?
Okay, first thing real quickly, because you know you run out of time, is number one, do go back to doing your fluid tests, because your fluid test is going to tell you, even if there's nothing wrong, it's going to tell you whether that engine oil or that coolant is almost expired and that engine is going to have deterioration while it's sitting there. So you don't have to take a combine and dump the oil if it's still good, all right, if it's not, if the additive package doesn't have a lot of moisture. So do your fluid tests, all right, on that. Look that over. That's very simple, all right. The other thing that I want you to do is make sure that all dipsticks are fully seated, because that's where moisture and dirt will enter. And the most important thing for you to do also is to cover the air intake and the exhaust, because any place in, there's going to be in every engine, there's going to be, if it's more than a one cylinder engine, there is going to be a valve open either on the exhaust side or the inside. And specifically with a combine, because it's potentially going to sit till next fall, is you're going to have moisture wick work its way up into that engine, and it's going to start to corrode the cylinders. It's going to bring moisture into the oil. It's going to bring moisture onto the piston rings. So, and in your small engines also, you cover the intake and exhaust and it doesn't have to be hermetically sealed. Cover it with a plastic bag, and you can wrap it with a bungee cord just to get the majority of moisture, stop the majority
might
of moisture.
Keep the mice out, too. Yeah.
That's true. That's a good point.
And the other thing to do, you were talking about your parking equipment. If it's in cold storage, if it's out, it could be outside. It could be, you said it was in a lean-to or a shed. If equipment is going to sit, go to town and buy one of those cheap blue tops. Right, they're like $4, even if you have to buy two of them for a combine, and always park the equipment on a tarp, and it's going to act like a vapor barrier, and it's going to stop the moisture from the soil, even on concrete, you stop the moisture from coming
so
up.
And back up just up. 1 second here. I was totally thinking you were throwing the tarp on top of
the
equipment,
that too.
And then I just like got blown away when you said put it underneath it. Let's talk
That's
this
right.
for just a second. You're talking it's a moisture barrier, vapor barrier.
That's right. They call it a vapor barrier, yes. Just like if you pour cement, lots of times you pour concrete and the contractor put plastic down there as a vapor barrier to stop the moisture from coming up. If you have to, and even if you're parking it in cold storage, all right, but the thing is that it's easy enough to buy one of those tarps and just, you pull it, and the same thing with your tillage equipment. Or you'll put your tillage equipment, even it's sitting in cold storage, you could get a tarp like that and put it on the top. Most of them, believe it or not, the majority of degradation happens, and you know, being on the farm, if you have a pickup truck, you have a car that you always park on soil, on a dirt driveway, on a dirt lane, or that's the one that rusts out because the moisture is coming from up underneath from the soil, and especially in the spring of the year. So do that with your equipment. Do your fluid analysis. You're putting it to bed. And then to get back to your original thing, I know you run out of time, about the few things to do during the winter. We did the fluid analysis. The other thing we're going to talk, we spoke about covering up the intake and the exhaust, parking it on a plastic tarp. And also what I want you to do is use the winter to get familiar with, on specifically on newer equipment, where all of the ground circuits are. And you need to do an inspection on the ground circuits, because today, as you were saying in the beginning, higher tech, a lot of electronics, and very, very ground circuit sensitive. You have what's called a high impedance ground. You could have I had a farmer, and I brought this up. I did a presentation, a commodity classic, 2 or 3 years in a row on the main stage. And I brought up three things about equipment, and I made a chart. And I'd be more than happy to, I could send you that PowerPoint if you'd like, and you can pull a chart off of it. The thing is that also calculated how many how many bushels of corn, and I think at the time was $3.50 a bushel, that lack of attention to detail cost you. If I had a farmer, he had a bad ground circuit on a John Deere combine, he would go into limping, all right? He was setting an over speed code for the turbocharger, all right? And the thing had, and they found that eventually it had a high resistance ground. He cleaned the ground, and the thing runs fine. He had a new ECU. He had 3 or 4 visits to the farm. He had 2 turbocharger sensors. They wanted to send them to give him a new wiring harness. And I'm not, this happens all day long. It happens in the medical community. It happens every place. But the thing is that I would rather have that guy have spent $5,000 next year on fertility or pay his loan down, right? Instead of going and he comes to you as a banker, says, oh man, I'm sorry, you know, things are tight, it's really not that good because combine cost me $5,000 without a warranty and this right. And that. And when you have a failure like that, that's avoidable. You spend a lot of money and you're back to where you were to 1 second before that failure came. So, but if you do those things and that's your winter project. And the other winter project, I would tell you, get with your tire dealer. Let him come over with a set of scales and either lend them to you and spend some time weighing your equipment, weighing with the implements on it. So when you go out into the field and write it down in a notebook, an old-fashioned notebook, say, hey, when I take the Steiger out into the field and I'm pulling this planter, I need to have 11 pounds of pressure in the tires. And unless you weigh your equipment, you're not going to know that. And that's something where you're not only going to save your tires, but you're going to limit your shallow compaction greatly because you're going to run the right tire pressure. But without, and that's another winter project that every farmer should do. And most tire dealers will be more than happy to lend you a set of scales.
Well, I never thought about that, but you just got my mind flipping towards the summer season. Something that I run into, and I know it's not necessarily a money-saving aspect, more of a comfort, but I feel like whenever I'm helping during the summer, whatever I get into, the air conditioner fails sometime. What are some good things that our listeners could learn from you about maintaining air conditioning systems, whether it's in a semi-tractor or...
Your wife's car.
Yeah, exactly. What are some good things to do to keep that air conditioner working?
Very simple. Very simple. Do you brush your teeth? Yes. Right?
Yeah.
Do you change the oil in a piece of equipment? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. But what people don't realize, and that, you know, all this technology came from the car industry. So it's nothing that's particular to agriculture. The thing is that what you need to do every 3 to 4 years, and I did a podcast on it, I'm not trying to spare audiences, about 2 years ago. What you need to do is do what's called a discharge, an evacuation, and a recharge. So what happens is there's a special machine. Your dealership has it. A larger farm, I tell people to buy it and co-op it with some of your friends because the machine is about $4,000 to $5,000, and then you could just have your own refrigerant, and you don't need to spend, if you have a lot of equipment or if not, have the dealer do it. You need to discharge the system, which means take the old refrigerant out. Then you pull a vacuum on, the machine does this. It's called a charging station. You pull a vacuum on the system. Why are you pulling the vacuum on the system? Because at 28 inches of mercury, water will boil at 54 degrees. So you're boiling the moisture out of the system. So now we have no moisture because the moisture mixes with the refrigerant and becomes an acid. So you boil the moisture out of the system, and then you put the proper amount of refrigerant in and the proper amount of refrigerant oil, okay? And then that compressor will last longer than the tractor. That system will last longer than the tractor. And you'll have efficient air conditioning. You'll have very cold duct discharge temperature. You'll have great humidity removal from it. And that's all that I've never put a nickel in an air conditioner in any vehicle or piece of equipment I had other than servicing it. And I have a Ford Escort with 470,000 miles on it, and the air conditioner will freeze you out.
Holy smokes.
So those are a ton of good topics that we've talked about there for maintenance, Tanner. I'm going to have you come up with a recap on this, and we try to recap everything, Ray. But before we do that, normally we ask all of our listeners one question, the same question for everybody, and it's what do the most successful farmers all have in common? So you don't have to answer it right now, but think about it for a second as Tanner wraps up and kind of reviews in summary what we talked about. Just think about what do most successful farmers have in common.
Yeah, so we got to meet Ray today, a farmer out of New Jersey, and the author of thousands of articles for the Machinery Digest. He introduced us to the three-legged stool of profitability. We all know that we pay attention to the agronomy and animal husbandry side of our operations. We all know that we want to focus on getting the highest price for our commodities, so we focus on the marketing side, but maybe we don't do as much on the maintenance side. So that was kind of our focus here. How can we help you achieve higher levels of profitability by paying better attention to what you do with your fleet of equipment? Usually, if something goes wrong, it's not an accident. It's either something got ignored or there was a failure that could have been prevented. So we want to make sure that we give our utmost attention to this. Really cool to find out that this might not be the sexiest topic, but it's a growing category. I think people realize how big those checks are that get written when it comes to equipment maintenance. Five major things that broke down this year. Put a summary together. Sit down, think about it. Figure out why it happened and do that diagnosis to maybe help you prevent from having something like that again. Pay attention to your fluids. Do your fluid test. Send that out. He gave a lot of examples on which fluids to do, coolant, fuel, oils. But remember that it doesn't have to be something of a major change. Start with those basics. Don't have blinders on when you're looking at your equipment. Open your eyes and try to really see what you've got. A couple of the wintertime things is covering the air intakes, putting a tarp underneath your equipment, make sure your dipsticks are sealed. And there's just so much in this, Dave. The whole episode, think about it. If you need to listen to it for a second time, really a good aspect, Ray. We thank you for sharing your wisdom with our listeners on how we could pay attention to the equipment and maintenance side of our operation to help us be more profitable.
So I'd give a challenge to everybody. This is not something you normally would think about as a way to make you more money by spending less. So spending less money. So I'm going to challenge you the same way that Ray did, and that is start basic. Write it down. Write down a simple maintenance deal. One thing I never have ever thought about, Tanner, is fluid samples. I didn't even know you could do that. I don't know where you'd send it. So maybe think about doing something like that. And pride in ownership. If you do good with your equipment, tell somebody about it. Have a little pride with it. So want to review the question again, Tanner.
Yep. So Ray, have you had a chance to come up with what the most successful farmers you've networked with, what they all have in common?
Yes, that's a very simple. You gave me a simple one. I just want to add also cover the exhaust, not just the air intake.
Oh, good point.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's no different than in engineering. It's no different than anything else in life. I'm going to have you answer your own question. If you were to say, what does a high-yield farmer do to achieve that yield? He's a record setter or he's close to a record setter. It is attention to detail.
Yeah.
That is it. It's attention to detail. And then, a friend of mine was a development engineer for Chrysler, and he would say the same thing. He said, it's attention to detail. Nobody's smarter than one another. It's how much attention to the detail did you pay. So if I go and buy a bag of seed and Hula buys a bag of seed and Dowdy buys a bag of seed and we all buy the same bag of seed, all right? Why they get more yield than I do, it's the attention to detail. Same thing with your equipment. It's the attention to detail. So it's it's more of a thought process. And I'll tell you one thing. It's easier to bring efficiencies to your equipment than it is to bring efficiencies to your crop yield or your animal husbandry side. It's just a matter of thinking about it and doing it and getting into and making it a protocol that you need to service it. You need to not accept failures as bad luck, It's not a lightning strike, all right? You need to understand, you need to do failure analysis. I'm not saying that you go crazy and send, you know, take whatever, but you need to understand what's happening. And it's just really, it's attention to detail.
That's a good one. Attention to detail all the way. And for our listeners, we pay attention to your detail as well, and we thank you for your reviews and likes and shares, and we want to continue to ask you to do some of that.
Yeah, so the way that you can send your topics and ideas to us is farmforprofitllc@gmail.com. But Ray, how can our listeners send you questions if they've got them?
Well, they could. It's my email address is hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. And if they go to my website, farmmachinerydigest.com, they could see all the podcasts. There's 120 or 130 technical, short technical articles. There's about 200 podcasts. There's road tests there. A farmer's through farmer's eyes road test of new vehicles, of pickup trucks, plus a 2020 Corvette. So I convinced General Motors to say, hey, you know, a lot of guys, they may want to buy Corvettes. So, but there's a lot of resources there, just like there is with you gentlemen as far as the business side of the aisle. And you really need to just, it's no different, but I'll say one thing honestly, and believe me, what you guys are up against with trying to do marketing, trying to do financing, trying to balance your books, the machinery side, to bring that in line is a lot easier and is a lot more concrete. I mean, you're not dealing with all of the variables of that the other sides, that the other two legs of the stool are. But if you never do it, then it's just like anything. You know, you don't brush your teeth, you're going to be having dentures, right?
Yep. No, you got a good point. No, Ray, we really appreciate you sticking around, answering all of our questions and sharing your wisdom with our audience and listeners. We hope you have a good one. And until next time, we'll see you then.
Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long.